will honor and learn more about our presidents, past and present, this hour, as today is President's Day. Or is it? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, February 17th. And this third Monday of February, as we will find out from our guest, is actually still officially George Washington's birthday, not President's Day. But that won't stop us from discussing all of our commanders in chief. And we will play a little presidential trivia as well. No prizes, but bragging rights if you are correct. Who was the first president born an American citizen? Was it George Washington, Andrew Jackson, Martin Van Buren, or William Henry Harrison? Who was the first president born an American citizen? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And we also welcome any questions or comments you have about American presidents. Do you have a favorite American president and why? Let me welcome our guest, Kenneth Davis, creator of the Don't Know Much About series, which covers history, geography, mythology, and other topics. He is the author of Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. His website is don'tknowmuch.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Always a pleasure to be with you, and happy, well, we'll call it President's Day, even though it's not.
Yeah, so give us the story behind President's Day. My calendar says President's Day.
Well, does it have an apostrophe after the S, before the S? That's the other confusion.
Oh, yeah. It's after. It's after the S on my calendar.
Well, you see that there are some that use just presidents, no apostrophe, or president apostrophe S, but all of those are incorrect, officially speaking, because it is still on the federal calendar, George Washington's birthday. And the way this came about was because the there was never a Lincoln's birthday federal holiday. Washington's birthday was a federal holiday from fairly early on, but it was always celebrated on his actual birthday of February 22nd. But then in 1968, Congress came up with what they call the Uniform Holiday Act, which gave us three-day weekend holidays around the calendar. And so what was technically George Washington's birthday was moved to the third Monday in February, where it is today. A lot of people thought, well, they were just combining two holidays that are nearby, Lincoln's birthday on the 12th and Washington's birthday on the 22nd, into one. And there's even urban legend that it was officially called President's Day, but it's not. It's still on the calendar as George Washington's birthday, even though, ironically, it can never fall on George Washington's birthday because the latest it could be would be the 21st, not the 22nd.
Poor George. Well, it's his...
Poor George.
Yeah.
But it is his day.
Yeah, it's his day, and I have to admit, I was under the impression that they were combining Lincoln and Washington with President's Day. But it's, I don't know, it's nice to, I guess, acknowledge our past presidents on a particular day. So that's what we'll do this hour. We'll talk about any and all of the presidents on what we will call President's Day. Well, let's start though with George Washington. I mean, we all know that he cannot tell a lie, or at least we think that that's the story behind George Washington. What are some things about him that we might be surprised to know?
Well, let's dispense with the cherry tree myth and where that came from in the first place. It was the creation of a man named who called himself Parson Weems, essentially wrote a reader for children shortly after Washington's death, passed himself off as the rector of Mount Vernon, Washington's plantation. And this really became planted so firmly in the American icon legend. He wanted to create a morality tales for children as a reader and couch them all around Washington's life story, which he fabricated, essentially, including the most famous story, the story of the cherry tree. Fascinating character, Washington, in oh so many ways. His father, by the way, did die when he was 11 years old. He had very few recollections of him in his adult life. He said he only remembered his father as a tall, kindly man, didn't really talk much else about him. Washington, by the way, had a very stormy relationship with his mother, who was a very cranky old lady who smoked a pipe, and they barely spoke to each other in the later years, although he treated her very well financially and otherwise. He did not have a warm, loving relationship with Mrs. Washington. I think a lot of people would be surprised. First of all, let's talk about the presidential aspect. Washington, has been suggested, was very reluctant to become president. That's kind of not true. He knew in 1787 at the convention, while they were debating the presidency, that he was going to be the first president. It was pretty well established right there. In fact, Ben Franklin says during the convention, "We know the first man at the helm will be a good one. After that, who knows?" Because everyone knew that the man who was presiding over the Constitutional Convention, George Washington, would become the first president. And his bags were packed when they let him know that that he had been elected, which, by the way, was only by 10 of the first 13 states. Two states hadn't ratified the Constitution yet, and New York, the third of the three states that didn't send electors, couldn't decide how they were going to choose their electors. So the first presidential election was a kind of chaotic affair.
Well, it was, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Electoral College, but was President Washington a good president?
You know, he was really a good president in the sense that he had a tremendous sense of the importance of what he was doing being precedent setting. He wrote to a friend and said, "I walk on untrodden ground." Washington, for all of his flaws, faults, whatever you want to complain about him, has to be seen as extraordinary because he truly could have at many times in his life wrested control of the country for himself. There's no question about that, that he could have made himself president for life or king or any of the other things you might want to call him. He was that powerful a figure and had the devoted following of the officers of the army as it existed back then. So we have to give him credit for that, that he didn't take his ambition and turn it into something tyrannical or despotic. And it certainly could have, and in other countries that were around the same time, like France under Napoleon, it did. So we have to give him credit for that. But he really understood that everything he did was establishing precedents. And he understood that if this republic, and he was devoted to the idea of republic, was going to work, he had to make sure that he put the right pieces in place. So was he a great president? I grade every president in my book, Don't Know Much About the American President, and I put him at the top with A-plus grades. There are four A-plus presidents. And not just as the greatest president, but for the people who had the most impact and influence on the role and importance of the presidency. So high marks for Washington as president. But there is one little surprise about Washington's presidency that I always like to tell people. He broke the law when it came to something very specific.
Really?
During his presidency. Yes, he did. At the time, well, he began, of course, in New York, which was the temporary capital. It was then moved to Philadelphia. And in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania, there was a state law at the time that said slaves brought into the state were freed after 6 months. Washington, of course, brought slaves to New York. He brought slaves to Philadelphia, but he deliberately moved them in and out of the state every 6 months to circumvent that law. That in itself was against the law. So we might say it's a misdemeanor or whatever, but he clearly was breaking a law that he knew existed to keep his enslaved people from being emancipated under Pennsylvania law. And this is the tricky kind of contradiction that we have to deal with, not only with Washington, but all of the early presidents, that these men who were so devoted to these ideas of liberty and equality and freedom for themselves and for the country, most of them kept slaves or were completely bound to the slavery system.
Yeah,
and
that's unfortunate.
That's the
yeah.
dark side of the story that we have to always remind ourselves of.
You mentioned that he is one of four A-plus presidents that you graded in your book. Without going into all of the details right away, who are the other three?
Oh, pretty easy. I think you'll know that Abraham Lincoln would be right up there alongside Washington. In fact, I specifically call Lincoln the greatest president still. And the other two are the Roosevelts, Theodore and Franklin D. Not just because they were great presidents in the sense of what we think of as a great president, but because they transformed and changed the office of the presidency in ways that few other men who have been in the office have.
We are talking about American presidents. And we just heard our guest say that the four that he gives an A-plus to in his book don't know much about the American presidents are George Washington, Abe Lincoln, Theodore, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Who do you think are the greatest presidents and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also ask a question or make a comment about one of our U.S. presidents, past or present. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the presidents on this President's Day with Kenneth Davis. He is the creator of the Don't Know Much About series. He's the author of Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. And we are welcoming your questions about American presidents at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you have a fun fact or some interesting nugget about a commander-in-chief that you would like to share? Who was your favorite U.S. president and why? Is there anything you've always wanted to know about a particular president? We welcome your questions for Kenneth Davis. And our first caller is John in Richland Center. Hello, John. You're on the air.
Hi. I my dad survived World War II, and Franklin Roosevelt, FDR, stayed out of the war till Pearl Harbor. He was a very deep thinker, and he was Teddy Roosevelt's son. He's my favorite president, and if you read his book, you'd know why I said that, okay?
All right. FDR is his favorite president. Well, what more can you add to that, Kenneth?
Well, first of all, thanks for the call, and just a quick correction. Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin D. Roosevelt were distant cousins, not father and son, but Theodore Roosevelt actually was closer in family relations to Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt's wife. He was her uncle and officiated at their wedding, the wedding of Franklin D. and Eleanor Roosevelt. But so certainly related, but not father and son, and certainly, as the caller mentioned, brought America into the Second World War after Pearl Harbor largely because of very isolationist Congress did not want to get involved with another European war, and of course it was then the war with Japan that ultimately brings the United States into the war. But certainly the facing both the Great Depression and World War II in the way that he did, transforming the American government, the introduction of almost everything that we know about in terms of the federal government, puts Roosevelt at the ranks of the most influential and important of American presidents. Mm-hmm. Some people, of course, in his day hated him passionately, but others, and a great many Americans, he was the most beloved of presidents.
Well, I'm not going to say my father hated him, but I remember my father was a World War II veteran, and he told the story about how FDR had said in speeches, you know, that we were not going to get involved in that war. Did he?
He said that as late as 1940, and that was certainly speaking to the mood of the country. I should mention Woodrow Wilson said exactly the same thing in 1916 when he was running. He ran on a campaign of "He kept us out of war." So both men were really playing to the crowds, in a sense, mm-hmm. saying that we're not going to do this. And of course, Roosevelt wanted, was doing everything he could to aid Great Britain in particular and France through things like the Lend-Lease Act, which enabled the United States to send armaments to allies who were fighting the Germans on very, very reasonable, easy terms. And that was the key to Lend-Lease. And each step that Roosevelt took was taking the country closer and closer, started a selective service system when the country was not at war, so because he knew that very soon there was going to be a need for a large army, and in that he was correct. So indeed, Roosevelt, like a lot of politicians, said one thing and was really contemplating doing another.
Yeah. And there was a debate, and probably resolved now by history. Did FDR know about the attack on Pearl Harbor before it happened?
It's a nuanced answer. Did they know? They certainly knew that the Japanese were planning an attack. They didn't know precisely where and when. Pearl Harbor was not considered as much a threat because it was so far even from Japan. They did not think that Japan had the military capabilities to do that. But warnings were clearly up. And then a lot of human failure takes over. Radar operators seeing Japanese planes coming and someone saying, well, that's just a delivery of planes that's coming from the mainland. So the notion that Roosevelt knew this was going to happen and the top leaders of the American military knew this was going to happen and allowed it to happen, the loss of thousands of American lives in order to bring America into the war, I think has been dismissed by most historians at this point.
Yeah, do you think that wartime presidents have an easier or harder time being supported by the people?
Well, that's an interesting question because since the War of 1812, when James Madison was reelected right after the war was declared, there's been this kind of urban legend or myth of the presidency that wartime presidents are always reelected. It doesn't quite hold up. Because, first of all, we look at 150 years ago, Abraham Lincoln was in the midst of a presidential campaign in 1864, really thought he was going to lose the election because the war was going so badly. Famously said during that war and during that campaign, don't change horses in midstream. Words to that effect. I'm slightly misquoting Lincoln there, but that's the idea. But there have been a number of other presidents who were lost elections in the midst of, if they weren't declared wars, certainly America fighting a war. Martin Van Buren, for instance, the United States Army was fighting a very, very long, bitter war in Florida, one of the longest wars in our history against the Seminoles, and Van Buren was ousted from office. So it certainly didn't help Martin Van Buren that we were at war, although not officially at war. Lyndon Johnson, I think, certainly would have lost the election, we can guess, in 1968 if he had chosen to run again. Of course, the war really forced him to leave office in disgrace with the anchor of Vietnam around his neck. He certainly could have run for another term but chose not to. Of course, Richard Nixon then defeated Hubert Humphrey in a very, very close election, Hubert Humphrey being Lyndon Johnson's vice president. But clearly the anti-war movement had forced Johnson to choose not to run again. Same thing with Harry Truman, a very unpopular Korean War. He could have chosen to run again, but he did not, largely because the Korean War was so unpopular. So that notion that we support the commanders-in-chief without question during wartime is a bit of a misnomer.
Another caller, Bill in Baraboo. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
The author had stated that George Washington had certainly the power to wrest control of the government. Were there any other presidents that made any efforts towards taking control for their own benefit?
Well, I guess you start with Richard Nixon. He started to wrest control of some of the government for his own benefit, including the FBI and the CIA during Watergate, but certainly not on the level of taking over the government. So I want to just be careful about that. People certainly accused Lincoln of using his powers in a dictatorial way during the war itself, because Lincoln assumed certain powers, emergency powers, including the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus, one of the fundamental constitutional rights that Americans have. Lincoln was accused of being a dictator in taking the country into the war as it did. So those would be the only sort of close, near examples. Of course, I mentioned how influential and powerful Roosevelt, Franklin D. Roosevelt, was in his time in the creation of so many new federal agencies to deal with the Great Depression in particular, first of all, and later on as the country went into war. But I think it's fair to say that there were people who didn't like Roosevelt, clearly didn't like a lot of his policies, but I don't think anyone accused him of you know, a dictator. Certainly not when you had the likes of Hitler and Mussolini.
We need to jump in. I'm sorry. Kenneth Davis will check news, then we'll be back. We are observing President's Day today by learning more about our presidents, past and present. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, February 17th. We are talking with historian Kenneth Davis. He is the creator of the Don't Know Much About series, which covers history, geography, mythology, and other topics, and the author of Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. We welcome your questions for him. We welcome your thoughts on U.S. presidents. Do you have a favorite U.S. president? Why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Kenneth, we just played Hail to the Chief. Can you tell us where that came from?
Well, it has a long and curious literary history, first of all. The words come from the poem The Lady of the Lake by Sir Walter Scott. So what's a Scottish romantic poet doing in the White House? It became a hugely popular stage play. The stage play led to a theater pieces written. And so in 1812, this tune that became known as Hail to the Chief, drawn from this Sir Walter Scott poem, became an international sensation. It was first played in 1812 in America to honor George Washington, coincidentally, and right after the end of the, I'm sorry, it was 1815, right after the War of 1812 ended. And it quickly became established in the American mind as the song for the to be played for the presidents. I think it was Mrs. Polk who really asked for it to be played regularly whenever her husband appeared. But it didn't actually enter officialdom until the 1950s, actually. That's when the director of the Marine Band said it should be played every time the president walks in. Preceded, by the way, most people would think it's one piece of music. The four bits at the beginning are called ruffles and flourishes. So it's Hail to the Chief is preceded by four rounds of ruffles and flourishes.
Interesting. Well, you know, we still have a trivia question on the table right now, a presidential trivia question. Let me just remind listeners, no one's at least tried to guess it yet. Who was the first president born an American citizen? Who was the first president born an American citizen? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's, though, take some other callers who have questions or observations. Mohammed in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Mohammed.
Yes, good morning. My comment is that Abraham Lincoln is my favorite president because for all the time he had a vision. For one thing, he's against slavery, and he has a way, he has a program for in his mind how the country should go. And then comes the split in 1861, and then became his slogan is Save the Union. Union indivisible. So in a sense, he was working and on motion in progress in motion toward achieving certain vision of his. While in my opinion, Reagan, he was the least popular, in my opinion, because he was unkind to the majority of the population, the poor, the working poor, the welfare people, the underdogs. And he had actually no vision. He want to stop things. He doesn't say, well, I want to go from here to there. I want to stop all these programs. And then he left the solution to his advisor. Thank you.
All right. Any comment on that, Kenneth?
Well, thank you for the call. And of course, Lincoln, I think many people would still, as I do, rank him number one of all the presidents. Of course, because of the crisis, I particularly like to think of Lincoln as the greatest president, not only for his achievements, which were extraordinary, but the way in which he did it. He had a sense of humanity, a sense of humor, a sense of humility that few presidents have equaled. He was also, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest writer of all American presidents. So as a writer, I'm partial to that. And the 2 minutes of the Gettysburg Address, it takes about 2 minutes to read it or speak it, is perhaps the greatest piece of American poetry ever written, that although we don't think of it as poetry. So Lincoln's remains my favorite.
Now, Mohammed wasn't so fond of President Reagan. Reagan was a movie actor before he became president. How unlikely was that?
A fascinating story in Ronald Reagan's life. Like many other presidents, you know, we think of presidents coming from, you know, tending to come from wealth and power, but a great many presidents, including Lincoln and Ronald Reagan, really came from the humblest of beginnings. He was a child of the Depression in many ways, became a real Roosevelt Democrat in his early life. Only later in life did he become passionately first anti-communist and then a much more passionate free market economist in some ways, and had a real turnabout in his life. I rank Reagan as an A president, and this is one of those questions where it's not whether that I like him or think his policies were the best, but in terms of his influence, because Reagan, first of all, came to office after a string of failed and presidencies cut short by assassination, scandal, incompetence, and really elevated the office back to the stature that it once had. Setting aside the policies, when we think of, you know, Kennedy being assassinated, Lyndon Johnson leaving in disgrace, Richard Nixon resigning in disgrace, Gerald Ford being an unelected president, and Jimmy Carter's somewhat failed single term in office, it had really been a long time before America had a president that restored the Oval Office to the singular space that it had occupied for a very long time.
Well, you know, I think we might as well give the answer to the first trivia question, as we have full lines and people just have their own comments or not. I guess they don't know the answer to this one. Who was the first president born an American citizen, Kenneth?
Well, one of the New Yorkers who, the four New Yorkers who became president, Martin Van Buren, and the reason he's the first American citizen who became president was he was the first born after 1776 and the Declaration of Independence. All the presidents born before 1776 were officially born British citizens, and yes, the Constitution made provision for that by saying that you had to be an American citizen or an American citizen at the time this document, the Constitution, was put into effect to become president. So even someone like Alexander Hamilton, born in the Caribbean, a bastard son, could have become president, and he had certainly had ambitions, but they were sidetracked.
And just as I mentioned that, Doug from Menominee emailed the correct answer that Martin Van Buren was the first president born an American citizen. So congratulations, Doug. As I mentioned, no prizes for that correct answer, but you get bragging rights. Well, let's put another one, another question out there just to see if some people want to guess. How old must you be to be elected president? How old must you be to be elected president? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And thank you, Ken Davis, for supplying these trivia questions for us. Let's take another call. Margaret in West Bend. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having the show. I just have a moment before I head in the door, but I actually have three favorites. Obviously, Jefferson is just a man of enormous intellect, and all you have to do is go to his little place and read his book to find out how much his brain could actually accomplish. He's remarkable. But my true favorite is actually Jimmy Carter. And I know a lot of people think he had this, you know, failed term and all, like you said, but, you know, you read his books and really what he accomplished even before he was president, taking on fraudulent elections. It is remarkable what he took on single-handedly with great opposition and terrific adversity. How he took on, corrupt elections is just really amazing to me. And then, of course, Barack Obama would be my third favorite. I think, view from 1,000 feet in the future, we will see him as one of our greatest leaders ever of all time. And I'll go because I got to go into work.
Thank you, Margaret, for sharing that. Well, what was Jimmy Carter misunderstood, underappreciated, Kenneth Davis?
I think underappreciated, certainly in some respects. Also, I mean, to be honest, not an effective leader, and that's, you know, what it really comes down to in so many ways. An effective manager and an effective stage presence. Some of the presidents we think of as greatest presidents were great because they understood the role of the presidency, and that statecraft sometimes is stagecraft, and Ronald Reagan, certainly the great communicator that he was, had that ability. So Jimmy Carter's was also sideswiped by so many external events over which he had no control and was unable to wrestle them away. The economic problems were larger than any one man could deal with, and certainly the hostage crisis was his true downfall. But when you go back and look at the Camp David Accords, largely forgotten in many respects, that this historic peace between Israel and Egypt, an extraordinary moment in 20th century history that Carter needs to be credited for, and it took a long time for him to get his Nobel Peace Prize for that, by the way. Also fascinating because few presidents have been as active and as vocal in their post-presidency as Jimmy Carter has been. Wonderful comments. Thank you for the call.
We have a break coming up. So just briefly, she certainly thinks that President Obama is going to go down in history as one of our greatest presidents of all time. How's that determined? And when do we decide if a president was great or not?
That's interesting. Of course, a lot of people just want to try and decide it while it's happening. Mm-hmm. And I personally have graded Barack Obama as with an incomplete in my book because his term obviously is still underway and so many things can still happen. Greatness is tricky because it changes with history, obviously. Somebody on leaving office is seen as a failure. Best case, perhaps, Harry S. Truman, seen as unpopular and a failed president in some ways because of the difficulties he had with Washington and Congress, and a Congress that was what he called do-nothing at the time. Interesting how history
does sometimes
come around. In retrospect, Truman has been elevated to among the great presidents because of his decisiveness and sometimes taking the unpopular course. So history can be a fickle mistress sometimes. But so I leave Barack Obama to the future.
Well, we have been concentrating quite a bit on the best or greatest U.S. presidents during this hour as we are observing President's Day. When we come back, I'll ask Kenneth Davis what presidents are maybe got an F in his grading system. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you have a question or a comment about our American presidents. Kenneth Davis is the creator of the Don't Know Much About series and the author of Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Kenneth Davis. He is the author of Don't Know Much About the American Presidents, and we are talking about the American presidents, offering some presidential tidbits and other fun facts and learning more about our country's commanders-in-chief on this President's Day. And we do have someone who has a guest to our presidential trivia question. We asked, how old must you be to be elected president? And we have Jim in Madison with us, I think, with the correct answer. Hi, Jim. What do you think?
I'm thinking it's 35 years old.
That is Kenneth Davis.
That is absolutely correct, and that is the minimum age. The youngest president, by the way, still is Theodore Roosevelt, who took office when he was 42. Now, why 35? Requirements for the Congress are a little bit lower. 35 was, you know, kind of middle-aged when the Constitution was written in 1787. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And they thought that that was an age at which someone would have achieved enough of a personal set of achievements to have something to go on. And it would also negate the possibility that a son of a president would be elevated. They were very, very concerned about that idea of presidential succession not becoming a hereditary succession. Of course, we've had two father and son presidents, the Adamses and the Bushes, but those are the exceptions to the rule. Very, very great concern. One of the reasons that Washington was so unanimously popular was that he had no children of his own. And so there wasn't that fear that there was going to be a succession of Washingtons.
Interesting. Who is the oldest president?
The oldest president is still Ronald Reagan, both the oldest elected and oldest to finish office. Before that, it had been William Henry Harrison, who was the oldest elected, but he didn't finish office, of course. He was the shortest lived president, died about 30 days after his inauguration, after catching pneumonia. He didn't catch a cold, by the way, by standing out and giving a long inaugural address, as legend has it.
Gene in Madison is with us now. Hi, Gene.
Yes. I'd like your opinion on Bill Clinton. Seeing as how he had three transformative laws which have radically changed America. He got rid of Glass-Steagall, which deregulated the banks with Gramm-Leach-Blinney. He signed into law NAFTA, changing tariffs and all that. And then He deregulated the FCC in 1996, which has led to six and maybe a half with the NPR or PBS media conglomerates. How do you rank Clinton? I consider him one of the worst in the last 50 years. Carter and Eisenhower, two of the best in the last 50, 60 years.
Right.
Interesting perspective. Interesting. Most people wouldn't put Eisenhower and Carter, I think it was, on that list. But interesting. Look, every president has ups and downs. I give Bill Clinton a B. Of course, he has to be seen in light of the fact that his second term in particular was completely plagued by the fact that he was being impeached. And we all remember the reasons for that, I think. But it's easy enough to refresh ourselves on the question of impeachment. So the second president impeached. But the caller is absolutely correct. I mean, this was major transformative legislation. You could throw in the changes to welfare rules as well that many people on the left side of the spectrum would say was a disastrous piece of legislation. But these are the core financial changes that have been made in the country, and a great many people would say that they to our benefit. I'll leave that to the economists to debate. But in terms of his effectiveness in the light of the resistance that he was facing from a very entrenched opposition party, still a remarkable series of accomplishments, whether you like them or not. So influential, extremely so. Many people also point to the fact that DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, and Don't Ask, Don't Tell were Clinton policies now recently reversed that had tremendous ill effect. So everything has to be thrown into the balance. And was he one of the worst? I certainly wouldn't class him that way, but a very, very mixed bag of legislation from a person who would be seen of, I would think, as a progressive president.
We have just a minute to go. Who do you see among the worst presidents?
Well, that's pretty easy. We start with the first three presidents who I give S to. They were all the presidents who preceded Lincoln in a row: Fillmore, Pierce, and Buchanan. Ineffective men who not only didn't do anything to prevent the coming of the Civil War, but in some cases may have hastened it. The other Fs are would be more recent, including George W. Bush, because I believe that the most significant decision a president makes is taking the country into war. And when we look at the disaster and damage created by the war in Iraq, we have to judge George W. Bush very harshly.
Well, I wish we had more time. So many other questions that we have, but we're out of it. Thank you so much, Kenneth Davis, for being with us.
So many presidents, so little time.
Thank you, Joy. I know that you're on sabbatical now. I read on your website. Are you working on a new book?
Well, I just finished it, so the sabbatical is officially over. And the new posts are going up today on President's Day. So, yes, there will be a new book. It's just finished. It's going to be a little bit more military history, but for people who don't like military history, battles that really talk about who goes to war for America and how we fight our war.
Well, let's talk about that the next time, okay?
Thank you, Joy.
Thanks. Kenneth Davis is the author of Don't Know Much About the American Presidents. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Robin Cherry for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.